credit card to get food delivered. "Hey, I don't have any of my own groceries here," I say. "I guess I could text one of the guys I know to bring me food." I wait, hoping he'll offer to share. He doesn't look over. "No visitors in my house. If you want to see someone, see him somewhere else. Can I have some of that?" "I'll buy groceries for me tomorrow." "There's plenty of stuff in the fridge. Eat whatever you want. No need to buy groceries."
"Thanks."
It's generous and even shockingly a little kind. "What are you eating?" His gaze slides to me. "You want some of this, huh? I'll tell you what. You can have it. And as payment, I'll bend you over the couch and fuck you hard from behind." My jaw drops, and my hands come up in silent protest. Then my shock wears off, and I glare at him. Before today, he was never this crude and abrasive. I can't help but wonder whether his sexual harassment is intended to drive me back and keep his walls fortified, lest I slip through a crack. He digs into the food and takes a bite, his eyes never leaving my face, which I'm sure is as red as the chilies in his dinner. He chews, and then holds out the carton to me. "Take it. I dare you." My heart slams against my ribs, and things low in my body come alive.
"No thanks. Just lost my appetite."
"If you say so."
His voice is sexy and rough, which makes my nipples tighten. I've never heard him sound like this before. No wonder women all chase him like catnip. I glance at the clock, relieved I'll have a distraction soon. My video call with the annoying man I'm doing a project with is in 10 minutes. I'm the only woman in the upper-level entrepreneurial e-commerce class, and all of the guys are super arrogant and aggressive. Two asked me out. One I actually kind of dated. But now, because I've made it clear that hooking up is off the table, they're all surly or dismissive. I've had the top score on two exams and a paper, but I'm not sure anyone knows. Sometimes, when none of them will let me get a word in during discussions, I want to wave my paper in the air like a banner. "See what Professor Smith Hall wrote? Best in class, top score." But if I did tell any of them the truth, it would only make them hate my presence in the course even more. And it would make me feel like an insufferable show-off. I want my hard work to speak for itself. So I keep calm and carry on. British Empire, all the way. Still, I know the pressure is on. I need to show Smith Hall more than my ability to memorize and to craft a clever paper. The internship will include doing pitches and presentations. The application outright says those without leadership potential need not apply. If I want a shot at an interview, I need a strong letter of support from Professor Smith Hall. I set up my laptop on the screened-in porch. It's cold, but at least it's quiet. I forgot to bring my heavy winter coat to Shane's. I'll get it after class tomorrow, but for now, I'm huddling in my jacket as I log into the meeting. My two classmates, Todd and Daniel, are already on screen and engaged in conversation about our project. Am I late? I glance at the clock. No, I'm on time. "Hey," I say. Daniel offers a quick greeting before launching back into conversation. Daniel and I went on a few dates. He's tall and wiry, with a beanie and short beard, and I liked his hipster style, which he counterbalances with a dry, self-deprecating wit. Too bad my first impression of him wasn't his true self. After a decent first date, we met a couple of days later to study over coffee, and he was rude to our overwhelmed waitress. His voice carried when he said scholarship students should stick to cafeteria work, not drag down businesses where efficiency is key. I told him to ease off, feeling the sting personally, since before Mom married Ethan, we lived paycheck to paycheck a lot. Instead of being nicer, he doubled down with digs like,
So many women are too sensitive to run a business. You guys don't have the killer instinct. When I countered with, companies with women on the boards are more profitable, and coolly spewed examples, he turned surly. When we left, as if to hammer home his disdain for the week, he was nasty to an elderly homeless person who was panhandling for change. That left me momentarily breathless. Completely mortified, I gave the man my last $5 and apologized while Daniel fumed, rolled his eyes, and muttered. I told him to lose my number. Crazily, he texted on and off for several days after, saying we just had an off day and should go out again. I resorted to ghosting. So it was super awkward to be assigned to a group project with him. Though, to give him a small amount of credit, he did apologize for acting so arrogant that day and has tried to be nice since. Unfortunately, when he's with Todd Bartarach, I see shades of the pretentious asshole he was on that coffee date. The screen door creaks, and I look up to see Shane step out. I don't have time to ask what he's doing. I need to understand why they're talking about accounting and the spreadsheets I created. I was supposed to go over that in the second part of this meeting. Hey, hang on a sec, guys. I thought we were going to review the mock-up of the website first.
Did that, and the product choices. We went with the graphic t-shirts, Daniel says.
Wait, you made a product decision without me? And which t-shirts? Not the Trekkie ones. The margin on them isn't great, and there's so much competition that I...
They talk over me, going on with a discussion of the spreadsheets and my automated workflows. I wonder if Todd's over-the-top dismissiveness is a show of solidarity with Daniel, or if Todd's just always a fellow asshole.
I like the workflows, Todd says. He's got floppy hair that he's always tossing like a wannabe model. Tragically, he's our team's de facto leader because he hails from a long line of investment bankers and dabbles in investing with money he acts like he earned but didn't.
They'll work fine, Todd continues. And the recurring reports feature is really good. Great work, Daniel.
That's my code, I say, my voice rising. I wrote it. I created the workflows and reports.
What?
Todd demands impatiently. I lower the pitch of my voice, careful to not give them an excuse to call me hysterical or some other sexist adjective.
It's obvious you guys met up without me. When? And why?
Hey, chill. We were already together at Todd's townhouse for some beers and we got to talking. Your name will still be on the project. No big deal that you haven't done as much work.
I feel the blood drain from my face. I've done a ton of work. All the spreadsheets, all the code. They aren't listening. In fact, they raise their voices to drown me out again as they decide to revisit the profit margins on the t-shirts.
Didn't someone do the research on cost? Where's that sheet? Todd asks.
I did the analysis, I say, rigid with frustration.
Good girl. Upload that so we can take a look.
A shadow looms above me. My gaze jerks upward.
Tell them to fuck off.
Shane speaks so low that for a moment I'm not sure I've heard him correctly. I ignore him, sticking with calm, and try again to make myself heard. I'm not really comfortable with being cut out of meetings. We all have to do that peer review at the end. How are you guys planning to rate me on my presentation skills when I haven't had a chance to explain the work I've done?
We're not. You're a freshman. You shouldn't even be in this class, Todd says with a scowl.
I did the prereqs as AP classes back and just upload the product research, he says, cutting me off.
I shake my head, my heart pounding.
I want to present it as an equal member of the team.
Yeah, that's not happening, Todd sneers. Now just upload everything you've got right now,
or we will sink you in the review and tell Smith Hall you didn't contribute to the project at all. My stomach twists into knots. Impotent rage makes me feel like I may vomit. This can't be happening. When I lift my fingers to the keys, they shake from the adrenaline rush. Shane's big hand plucks the laptop off the table and turns it around so the camera's on him. Are you for real? Did you just gang up on a teenage girl and threaten to tell the teacher on her for not helping you? What kind of fucking pussies are you? A shocked silence follows. After a beat, Shane reads their names out loud from the screen. His voice is so menacing and deep he could be a wolf growling. You boys have heard of the pit, right? Where douchebags are turned into ground beef? Expect to find yourselves there soon if you act on the threats you just made. His stony expression and everything about the way he looks and speaks has cowed them into speechlessness. Something I've never seen from these guys. Shane flips the screen down with a snap and sets it back on the table. Then he whips out his phone and starts texting. For several seconds, I'm frozen. Then I grab his arm. Hey, he looks at my hand. And then at my face. Hey, yourself. If you want to put a hand somewhere on my body, go lower. I withdraw it like I've been burned. He may have defended me, but it's apparently not an invitation to be friends. What's the pit? Did you make that up? Inside, I'm horrified, but also fascinated. Is there really a place where men who step out of line are brought down by some form of dark vigilante justice? I know it's wrong, but a little part of me enjoys the idea. Shane exhales a chuckle. If I were lying, do you think they'd call my bluff? Yes, they might, I think nervously, as he continues to lean over his phone. When he looks up, his expression is serious. Get into the project folder, or wherever you uploaded your files to, and delete them all before those assholes get a chance to download them. Why? I have to participate. It's your leverage. Do it now, he says, yanking the screen up. His voice is so firm that I don't stop to think. Instead, I enter the communal workspace and delete the documents. Done. I check the log. No one has downloaded anything. I lean back and then grimace. But doing this won't help. They'll exclude me from the project and destroy me in the peer evals. No, they won't. His tone suggests that my worry is laughable. But he doesn't know my two pampered and misogynist group members like I do. I know you're very popular, but these guys won't care about that. They've got huge egos, and they're not used to being humiliated. Threatening violence will probably just get you reported to campus police or Grand Thorpe administration. You think so? His tone is mild as his brow quirks, like he can't imagine it. I do. Guys like that? They'll never let this go. Remember the way you and Declan destroyed me socially in high school? The way no upperclassman would speak to me or look at me? My voice falters and trails off. The corner of my mouth tugs down and inwardly I cringe. I do not want to revisit that topic. He watches me. His face is impassive as if he's unmoved. But his shoulders square. When guys with power get angry, it never ends well, I say. Shane's brows rise again. In high school, you got what you deserved. I did not. My mom made a mistake that she regretted, by the way. But you were furious and you ruined my life at that school because of it. Your mom was the only one who made a mistake? His eyes cut into me. No. His tone is measured, but a deep frown appears. And for the record, I never said anything to anyone. Well, Declan certainly did then, I say softly. People didn't stop speaking to me overnight for no reason. You should have told the truth. Right when your mother accused me, I wince.
I didn't know the truth. I blacked out and woke up naked. I didn't know what happened to me. You sure as hell knew I hadn't had sex with you. You were a goddamn virgin back then. You'd have known if a guy shoved his dick in you. Even if you couldn't remember the details, you'd have been able to tell. I felt sore all over that morning, from a hangover. Sore muscles from dancing on tables and around the basement. Not sore between your legs. It was my first hangover. I was innocent and dumb. And I never accused you of anything. No, you didn't. You stayed silent while she accused me. You let it go on. She called the fucking police. His fury and frustration rams into me like fists until I can't breathe. I told her I didn't think you had. When? When she and I were alone in the bathroom. I tried to tell her to hold on until we could figure things out. So you say now. I'm not lying. What I know is that you disappeared to the second floor, the princess's tower, and left me to twist. After the cops talked to you, they seemed more convinced than ever that I was guilty. Shane, no. I was proven innocent by video footage, which existed because your bitch of a mother made my own fucking father distrust me so much he had cameras stashed all over the basement. He grinds his teeth and then adds, security cameras my ass. He was watching me. Even after I let them run me out of my own goddamned room, so you could have it, and we wouldn't be on the same floor. I lived in the basement for a year, but it wasn't enough. My throat is tight as I swallow. I can't believe I'm finally getting to have this conversation with him. He usually immediately shuts down any discussion of the past. She's really overprotective, Shane. She was scared and irrational that morning from the shock of finding me that way. He rolls his eyes, taking a step back toward the door. I have to stop my hand from reaching out. I want to settle this with him. Shane! It wasn't just that morning, he says, cutting me off, a flash of anger in his eyes. And she wasn't the only one to jump to conclusions that morning. You went along with her when you had to know it wasn't true. Is that what you thought? That I actually knew the truth and didn't speak up? My God. He believes I lied? My stomach plummets. How can you claim you didn't? When you moved in, I made sure I was nice to you. More than nice. When did I ever say no when you asked for my help with anything? Never. I open my mouth to speak, but he doesn't give me a chance. He's more animated now, the anger spilling out like oil from a tanker that's been ripped open. He steps forward and leans into my personal space. I can feel the rage wafting off him like heat from the pavement. By then, you'd lived with me a year, Avery. So don't pretend you didn't know you could trust me. You knew. He jerks back, his lip curled. How could you act like I'd rape you while you were unconscious? The way my dad looked at me. He swallows, his eyes distant, as if recalling the moment in horrible, vivid detail. That was a knife you buried in my fucking heart. The pieces, which I now realize I've had all along, shift into place. His lingering anger finally makes sense. He's in pain. The bone-deep kind. Shane and his dad were incredibly close, right up until the moment I was found naked, with Shane standing over me, dressed only in a pair of boxer briefs that failed to hide his obvious erection. My mom lost it, though I couldn't remember anything. She was adamant that her worst nightmare had come true, that Shane had exploited my incapacitating drunkenness to take what she said teenage boys want most. Mom accused him of coming back for more when she caught him. Once awake, I'd been shaking and tearful, my brain in a hungover fog. Shane glowered at us in a way he never had before. For the first time since we moved in, he'd seemed menacing to me. Then Ethan came downstairs and saw his wife distraught and me dazed and confused, clumsily trying to cover my naked body, It was a horrible mess. And once the police are called, they investigate. It didn't matter that I told her to call them back to tell them not to come. When the police talked to me in my room, I told them I didn't think Shane raped me, or that he would rape anyone. But maybe I wasn't forceful enough about it. I couldn't get animated because I was so sick to my stomach. Any sudden movement caused me to throw up. Thank God Ethan remembered he had security cameras and thought to check them. It proved Shane was already in his room asleep when I came downstairs, wildly drunk and completely out of my head. I'd shed my own clothes, like I was changing for bed. But then I didn't put anything else on. I'd been blackout drunk and pretty much comatose all night. I was mortified at having the police and my stepdad watch my indecent drunken behavior. But it was hard to focus when I still felt wretched physically. My mom and Ethan were relieved. They cast the blame for my drunkenness on the older kids who'd given me liquor and told Shane they were sorry for suspecting him of an assault. All three of us had just wanted to pretend that night and its aftermath never happened. But Shane's white-hot rage at us burned out of control. Our apologies fell on deaf ears, and he packed a bag the next day and left, refusing to speak to us. It took almost 3 months before he even took a call from Ethan. He was shockingly distant. It was as if we'd all died. "It was a terrible mistake," I say, hoping he hears the truth in my voice. "She's sorry, we all are. I should have defended you more strongly, but I was just so stunned and sick. So disoriented." When he's silent, I try to explain more. "It all happened so fast. Can you—"
"Whatever."
His expression shudders, his rage disappearing behind the cool, unfeeling mask I've seen him wear the past 2 years.
"The real mistake was my not moving to Dex sooner. I should have left the minute they said they didn't want me on the second floor. Like I was a fucking dog that couldn't stop himself from humping someone's leg."
My mouth drops open. Why had I never realized this was how he felt? Ethan had made it sound like living in the basement was what Shane wanted. That having his own in-house apartment was a good move for Shane. They must have been trying to protect me.
"Fuck all the excuses and rationalizations," he says through clenched teeth as he shakes his head. "You know what? Enough of this. Let's go in the house. It's time for you to pay the rent."
Chapter 5. Shane. My cock's rock hard and raging to get out because even fighting with Avery makes me want to fuck her. As soon as we're back in the house and facing off in the living room, I jerk the zipper of my jeans down and free my erection. Avery stands a few feet away, watching me with wide eyes. I crook a finger at her. When she doesn't move, my eyes narrow. "The deal means I don't need to coax you." The slight tremor that goes through her makes me clench my teeth. For an instant, I think she's going to bark. Given the mood in the room, if I were in her place, I would tell me to fuck off. But we're nothing alike. I bow to no one. But I'm also loyal till the bloody end. And I never need anyone to convince me of things I should already know. I also don't defend actions that are indefensible. "This is really how you want to handle things?" she says, her voice low and furious, as opposed to rattling on about the past. Of course, I want a blowjob instead. I'd rather have a root canal than revisit that morning. Yeah, it is. Avery surprises me by grabbing a cushion from the couch. She lifts a chin and, with thunder in her expression, walks to me. Anger on both sides works just fine. No teeth. She drops the cushion at my feet without acknowledging what I've said. Maybe that warrants more conversation, but talk is the last thing I want. What I need is her mouth too full to speak. What I need is to wipe away the toxic cocktail of emotions that being near her always stirs. I was good to her once, and it came back to bite me. Avery Kershaw is a bomb in disguise, the kind that can detonate and take out everything around it. She lowers herself to her knees, and I like seeing her there. Avery's hand flutters over the base of my cock. Her fingers are cool against my feverish skin, but the touch is too light. I draw in a harsh breath. The weight is killing me. Brushing her hand away, I fist my cock in my hand. Then I rub the head over her pouty lips, leaving a salty glaze on them. She licks her lips, as if it's a taste test. It's maddening, but so fucking hot, it almost brings me to my knees. Then her tongue leaves her mouth and strokes the head, and my mind explodes. My lids fall, and I groan when she takes me in her mouth. My hands drop to my sides, and I draw in a ragged breath. Her mouth's so soft and wet and perfect that I let her tease me by just sucking the tip until I can't. My hand reaches for her head, and I find her ponytail. It usually annoys me to see it, too much like the way she wore it in high school, but right now it's the perfect handle. I pull her forward, and she shudders. She grips my thighs to brace herself, and her mouth goes slack. Not what I need at the moment. When I speak, my tone's a warning. Avery. Her lips close around me, and she sucks hard. Pleasure rips through me. Fuck yes. Her movements are stilted, like she's trying to work out what to do. A fleeting thought that maybe she's got limited experience passes over my mind. The more limited, the better, as far as I'm concerned, even if it means she needs direction. She doesn't resist my hand controlling her head. I drag her forward onto my cock until it's halfway down her throat, which feels so fucking good. I groan as her throat convulses. Then I pull back, but keep a tight grip on the ponytail, making sure her mouth stays where I want it. Wrap your fingers around the base, tight fist. My voice is gravelly and rough with need. She follows instructions, yeah, like that. I move a hand over hers, showing her how to stroke me into her mouth. I set the rhythm. After a few minutes, I'm fucking her mouth roughly, and she's taking it. More than taking it. She plays my cock like an instrument. I savor every second. It's not smooth. It's raw and deep, which is better than smooth. My balls tighten and fire shoots from me. My head tips back, my hips jerk, and I come like it's been a year since the last time I did. It wipes my mind blank, which also feels good. My heartbeat echoes in my ears, along with the sound of my breath as I catch it. Standing still, calm washes over me in ways it never has. When my thoughts unscramble, I step back and look down at her. Her lips and cheeks are blushing a dark pink. She licks the corner of her mouth and swallows. If I hadn't just come, that would give me an instant hard-on. But for the moment, I'm beyond sated. For so long, I've avoided being near Avery, which I now realize wasn't a solution to our problem. Deep down, the unresolved fury and more was still simmering. Right now, the anger's gone, like I made her swallow it. I put my cock away, staring at her. She rises, looking embarrassed and something more that I can't name. You haven't given a lot of blowjobs, have you? Her arched brows draw together for a moment. Then she frowns. Seemed to work all right for you, she says tautly. This makes me smirk, and that, in turn, makes her frown harder. I forgot how cute she can be. I tried to bury some memories so deep I practically dug a hole to hell. She returns the cushion to the couch and smooths it down. How many guys have you been with? Go to hell, Shane. My brows rise, but she doesn't notice my bemused expression because she doesn't look at me. Instead, she goes to the closet, grabs one of my coats, and puts it on. Does she think she's leaving? It's late. Never a good time for a girl to walk around alone. The whole point of her being here is so she'll be safe. I guess she's not thinking straight after what just happened. My body moves toward the front door, prepared to block her exit. Instead, she heads the other way. It isn't until I hear the door to the back porch open that I remember her laptop still outside. Avery's not trying to leave. She just wants to be left alone. I'll give her that. At least until the next time.
Avery. Fuck Shane. As I stalk away from him, anger isn't the only thing I feel, though. It's supposed to be. But looking up the lines of his body while on my knees brought so many things rushing into my head. Physically, it was shockingly intense how attracted to him I was. The way he looked as his chest strained his t-shirt with his deep breaths. The way his head tipped back in concentration. The rough sound of his voice as he cursed from the sharp pleasure. All of it seeped inside me, calling for my own body's involvement in what was happening. Into what I was making him feel. In my core, I still feel the reverberations. The ache between my legs where the cock I tasted is really supposed to go. Shoving open the door to the back porch, I practically stumble outside. The cold strikes me like a slap, making my breath catch and then fog the air. The frosty night is bracing and will hopefully help clear my head. I look over my shoulder, but he's not in the doorway. If I'm being honest, I'm sorry he didn't follow me. But weirdly, I don't feel any longing the way I once did, because providing him with oral sex was an interaction that actually had a resolution. One he seemed to very much enjoy. It's such a change from the past couple of years of seeing him across a room and watching him turn and walk away. Tonight, I wasn't ignored or dismissed, and that was satisfying for me in its own way. For the past 2 years, Shane's cold attitude never failed to frustrate me to the point of wanting to scream, because it felt so like my childhood. When my dad failed to show up, failed to call. Failed me, period. Apathetic silence from someone you want to be close to is the worst. The run of my thoughts causes me to shake my head at myself sharply. What the fuck, Avery? I murmur under my breath, willing myself to get my head together and stop thinking of that blowjob as anything other than a transaction. I serviced him the way a prostitute would, for a price. His own emotions were not engaged. As I grab my laptop, it almost slips from my hand. My jerking movement to catch the computer causes my knee to bump against a plastic chair, which topples and bangs to the ground. I stiffen, my heart thudding. Jesus. Normally, I'm not clumsy. Everything seems to have me a little off balance these days. Ever since I came to Granthorpe, I've slowly descended into darkness, partly because of the threat of Casanova, but also from the threat of facing Shane on his own turf again. Since the rift, he's been quite good at bringing me to my knees, though usually just mentally. He's the prince, I'm the peasant. Logically, I know that isn't true. But he can make it feel true with one look, or the lack of it. Right now, I feel strangely better, even though I know he doesn't care about me. Don't care right back. Shane Morin doesn't matter. He's just the guy who's providing a safe haven so you can reach your goals. In a few years, you'll have moved on, and none of this will mean anything. With a few slow, deep breaths, I set the chair on its legs and walk to the door. It's strange how emotionally steady I am right now. Being a sex slave should be completely humiliating, and yet.
I lick my lips. And for a second, I taste him all over again. If I'm being honest, I liked the feel of him in my mouth because it gave me some power, especially when he came. In that moment, the walls came crumbling down. We weren't at war. For that brief time, the rest of the world fell away, and so did the past. When I go inside, he's nowhere around. It doesn't matter. We each got what we needed from the other. Soon, we won't need anything at all. I'm looking forward to that day. I can almost taste freedom. It's sweet and salty and sensual. Like him. Chapter 6. Avery. In the morning, I come down from the guest room dressed and ready to go to campus. Even though it's 7:30 and my first class isn't until 10, I want to get out of the house. I can head to my dorm room and study there until I need to get to class. My steps toward the kitchen falter when I smell coffee and hear sizzling. I'm barely breathing as I creep toward the entryway. Shane's standing at the stove, and he's shirtless. My God. His chest muscles make my tongue want to explore his body's texture, which reminds me of the way I got intimately acquainted with a certain part of him last night. I should probably have mixed feelings about what I did with him, but so far, I'm still fine with it. I felt his anger change into lust when I dropped to my knees before him. And for the first time ever, it felt as though I had the power to change the dynamic between us. Even now, he seems more relaxed than I've seen him look the past couple of years. It could be wishful thinking on my part, but I swear that blowjob, the first I've ever given, was more effective in cooling his anger than 2 years of attempted apologies and carefully polite interactions ever were. I drag my eyes away from his chest. But my gaze doesn't get far before it's transfixed on the black and charcoal gray tattoo on his left shoulder and upper arm. He didn't have that in high school. Before I realize it, I've walked up to him to get a closer look. It's a knight in full armor. The headgear reminds me of the Mandalorian's helmet. The breastplate has warring serpents. The details are stellar. His bicep flexes and his low voice says, "Go ahead." That voice does things to me. Between my legs. What? "Give him a kiss." He raises his arm slightly, moving it toward me. "You know you want to." So damned cocky. I'll give him a kiss when he flips his helmet up. My tone's smart-assed to match my words. Shane gives me a speculative look that probably sees more than I wish it could. Retreating to the counter across the room, I give him my back. My lips purse together, still tingling at the thought of pressing against his tattoo. I open cupboards looking for mugs. Coffee cups? When he doesn't answer, I look over my shoulder. He doesn't point me to the right place or even bother to turn toward me, jerk. When I find them, I yank a cup from the shelf and set it on the counter with a thwack. "You break it, you buy it." "Deal." I raise the mug and smack it down again. The loud sound startles even me. When I look over my shoulder, he's turned to face me. I stare at him with narrowed eyes and lift the cup again. "I dare you." His voice is stern in its challenge. My hand falters a second. Then I bang the bottom of the mug against the counter. He stalks over, jerks the cup from my hand, and sets it aside. Then I hear a crack, and warmth spreads over the seat of my jeans. It takes a second for me to realize he swatted me on the ass. I suck in a breath, my eyes widening. "What the hell?" "More?" he asks. "Maybe," my body says. But I rail against that crazy thought. My hand presses against his chest. I mean to push him back, but the touch is electric. and causes me to pause. When I do remember to shove him, it's anticlimactic because he doesn't so much as sway. Big, strong, unbelievably good-looking. If there's a god, he hates me. All right, I say. You've made your point. His expression is surly. I think he might smack my ass again. But then the ham starts to smoke, which gets his attention. Thankfully, he moves back to the stove. I check the mug to be sure I haven't cracked it. Fortunately, it's heavy stoneware and can take a little counter-banging. As I fill the mug, I chew the corner of my mouth. I want to start a civilized conversation with Shane to keep us moving in the right direction, but I have no idea what to say to him. He sets the frying pan on a cool burner and then goes to the table with his plate. I watch him over the rim of my mug. What is topping the ham on his dish? I'm not sure it's a good idea to get close to him right now, so I go to the stove instead. There is something caramelized in the small skillet. After a beat, I realize it's pineapple. I dip my finger in and bring it to my mouth. Oh my God. It's brown sugary and seared in something, maybe butter. My feet carry me quickly back to the cupboards containing the dishes. When I have a full plate of glazed ham, I sit at the table. I don't speak. My mouth is too busy. Shane rises, leaving his dish. As he walks away, he says, "When you're done, clean the kitchen." "Sure." I'll start by licking every drop from these plates, I think, dragging my tongue across my lips. To his broad retreating back, I say defiantly, "If I have time." He doesn't rise to the bait. Such control. Shane could teach a masterclass in defending his walls. Maybe that's why he got a dark medieval knight tattooed on his arm. On campus, my nerves act up when I think about attending my entrepreneurship class. I'm sure Todd and Daniel will be gunning for me like never before. I've had a taste of that in class. In the second week, I'd been speaking and Todd cut me off, claiming I had my facts wrong about big data being more valuable than fossil fuels. When I looked things up later, I confirmed my facts were correct. But it was too late. He sounded so confident when he challenged me. I'm sure the class believed he was right. I wonder whether Professor Smith Hall took my falling silent as a sign of weakness. I wish I'd argued my position harder back then. I will now, because I can't afford to be shown up in class with the internship recommendation letter on the line. As I approach the door to the lecture hall, I spot Eric Sorensen standing a few feet away. He barely seems human. Cross a lion with a giant stone tower, and you've got something akin to Eric Sorensen's presence. People in the corridor literally stop and stare at him. The shoulder-length blonde hair appears wildly uncombed, like he rampaged across campus all night, then decided to stalk over. When I reach the door, he steps forward and opens it. I glance up at him. He doesn't speak, but does incline his head ever so slightly by way of a greeting. "What are you doing here?" I ask. He doesn't answer. Instead, he follows me into the lecture hall. My heart thumps wildly. What is going on? Did Shane send him? Partway down the steps, Eric takes my arm into his massive hand and stops my progress. I glance up in time to see him nod toward an aisle. I look down it and spot the guys from my project group. I stiffen. "Walk," the Viking giant says. I don't move. "Need me to carry you?" "What?" My head jerks up to look at him. His face appears unchanged. There's a scowl, like he's set to murder someone. I decide he's serious about carrying me bodily to sit with Todd and Daniel. So with dread drilling a hole into the pit of my stomach, I head down the aisle. With every step, my feet feel heavier. By the time I'm a few feet from them, I'm shuffling. In a low voice, Eric commands the men with one word.
Stand.
The guys clamber to their feet. Todd has a black bruise around his eye. Jesus.
Morning, Avery, Todd mumbles.
My jaw drops open. Daniel greets me as well without meeting my eyes. Then they look over my shoulder at Eric. Only then do they retake their seats. Following suit in this odd tableau I've found myself in, I lower myself into a seat, trying to remember how to breathe. Eric sits next to me, barely fitting in the seat. Other students file in and cluster around us.
Hey, Eric, great game, man.
One guy in a Granthorpe Knights t-shirt says. Eric nods. The guy thrusts out a hand and introduces himself. Eric shakes it, then inclines his head to the side toward me, saying,
Avery Kershaw, Shane Morin's stepsister.
The guy smiles at me and raises a hand in a wave.
Hey, nice to meet you.
I nod, my mind racing. There is no reason for Eric to be here unless Shane sent him. And given Todd and Daniel's shrunken appearance ever since we arrived, it doesn't take a genius to know Todd's black eye is somehow related to my newfound campus adoption by Shane and his friends. It's the why I can't fathom. You don't have to stay, I whisper to Eric when Professor Smith Hall approaches the podium. In a Shane-like manner, Eric doesn't answer or even acknowledge that he's heard me. Instead, he leans back and folds his arms over his massive chest, settling in. I glance around. People are looking at us while pretending not to. It's the opposite effect of what happened in high school when Shane and Declan froze me out. In high school, I went from being popular to being non-existent. Now I've gone from invisible to visible. That's the power Shane and his friends wield. When I open my laptop, I find an email message I've been CC'd on from Todd. It's to our professor. Dread curdles in my stomach. But when I read it, my fear drains away. I read it again to be sure I'm understanding it correctly. The bottom line is that our team has decided that as the biggest contributor to the project, I'll be the one presenting. Oh my God. Unbelievable. I finally exhale. Two different feelings war within me, like those serpents on Shane's tattoo. One is elation, the other, fear. I've got my shot at showcasing myself as team leader. But I owe it to Shane. And owing him a favor puts me in an even more precarious position than before. Chapter 7. Avery. Eric comes with me to Cafe Ramen. People turn and stare at him, which I guess is normal for him. I wonder if he feels like a celebrity or a freak. Maybe both. It was cool of you to come to class. It made things easier for me and I appreciate it. But you don't have to have lunch with me, I say softly. He glances down at me for a moment, then continues walking with me to get in line. On the walk over, he said zero words. Zero. I guess he's going to continue the trend. Okay, stay and have lunch with me. I blow out a breath. I've never seen Shane or his friends here, so I don't think low-key and cheap is their scene. Where do you normally eat?
The team dining room.
Wow, he answered. And, of course, it makes sense that GU's superstar athletes have their own place. I frown, thinking of Shane. He's not on the football team. I never see Shane here. Actually, it's not just the cafes and dining halls where I don't see him. I'm not sure I've ever seen him walking on campus either. Does he usually eat at home? Eric shrugs his massive shoulders.
You're a regular fountain of information. But try to give other people a chance to talk.
If the snark registers, it doesn't bother him. Once we have our food, people who know him or know of him circle around us. He nods for people to take the empty seats, and within a minute, our table's like an ant colony teeming with life. Even though I can barely move my arms because we're so squeezed together, it's nice. It's a welcome change of pace from the solitary life I've gotten used to. Eric introduces me exactly as he did in class. It's the opening people seem to need. Suddenly, I'm bombarded with questions about myself. I answer between bites. When we're finished, he leans toward me.
I have practice.
Sure, I murmur with a nod. Have a good time. I mean, workout? Awkward. But I decide it's fine because stellar conversational skills clearly aren't something he values. He rises, nods at the table, and then heads toward the door. A stunning blonde girl who's coming in stops to say hello. He speaks to her for a moment before he leaves. She's joined a minute later by another gorgeous girl. This one's more petite and looks Latina, with skin the color of a latte. They come to my table, and their glinting golden diamond javelin pins mark them as members of the dance team, the campus's female elite. Both young women have super precise cat's eye liner, high ponytails, and short skirts. I wonder whether they've come from a performance. The blonde leans in, giving me a friendly smile. Hi, Avery, right? Yes. I'm Eden. This is Aria. We eat here at this time every Wednesday. You should join us next time. Aria winks at me, like we're all sharing some friendly secret. I'm at a loss for words, and I'm not remotely cool enough to pull off winking at these girls. Fortunately, they don't wait for me to respond before walking off. All right. What is going on? Is this a she's all that bet Shane's made to see if he can make me popular in 2 days or less? If so, mission accomplished. Uneasily, I grab my phone to text him that I'd like him to desist. Then I realize I forgot to get his cell number. For reasons unbeknownst to me, he changed it after high school. I text my stepfather, Ethan, asking for Shane's number. My table's mostly empty by the time he responds. Ethan.
Hey, kiddo. Glad to get your texts. But why only text messages the past couple of days and no phone call? We want to hear your pretty voice. You okay?
Avery. Yeah, sorry, just busy.
I'm lying. I've hesitated to call because there are some topics I don't want to talk about, and it's so much easier to avoid them in a text exchange. After the lavender rose, I nearly went home. Now I'm so glad I didn't. That makes me think about last night and the way Shane's fingers felt against my hair as his hard cock glided into my mouth. Which is all I thought about last night in bed, too. So much so that it turns me on. And it was only after fingering my clit for an hour in the guest room bed that I finally managed to fall asleep. Jesus. Right. Obviously, I can't talk about what I've been up to, or the fact that I'm staying at Shane's place, or the reason I went to see him in the first place. If Mom and Ethan found out about the rose, they would lose their minds and drive straight to campus to pick me up. Avery. So, can I have Shane's number? The phone rings. Ethan. Shit. I glance around. With Shane as the topic, this conversation could be strange and awkward and not the kind of thing I want anyone at GU to overhear. All four of us know Shane blames me and my mom for wrecking his relationship with Ethan. My mom claims the reason Shane's unwilling to forgive her and Ethan for the misperception and the secret video cameras is because Shane's jealous of her place in Ethan's life. I partly believed that because he held such a grudge. Now, though, I don't think that's his reason at all. From what Shane said yesterday, from the time we moved in, they basically told him they didn't trust him with me. I, on the other hand, was told to leave Shane alone in the basement so he could have his privacy. That was obviously a huge lie, since cameras were pointed around the basement, including right at Shane's bedroom. There were no second floor cameras, except one that was directed at the stairs, presumably watching to make sure he didn't come up to my room. That's crazy. And it's creepy that they put all those cameras in place. Why would they go to such extreme lengths, especially Ethan? I kind of understand it where my mom's concerned. She's always been insanely paranoid that something will happen to me. When we moved into Ethan's, I was 15 and only 5'3 and 100 pounds. At 17, Shane was a full foot taller than me, 90 pounds heavier, and solid muscle. Of course, if you put us side by side, one of us was a physical threat and the other was not. But Shane was never a bully back then. In fact, before things went sideways in that house, if anything, he was protective of me and used his size and strength to cater to me. Ultimately, it was my wandering downstairs, which I often did despite the rules, that caused the trouble. If my mom and Ethan hadn't overreacted to what they saw that morning, things could have turned out so differently. After Ethan's call goes to voicemail, I send another text. Avery. What's up? Ethan. Sad face. I'd appreciate a call back. Now, Ave. I purse my lips nervously. Ethan never gets sharp with me. He's a better dad than my bio dad by a factor of 10,000. And lately, I've been a lousy daughter to him, leaving his calls and texts hanging while Casanova prowls around the campus. It's unkind. I hop up, grab my bag, and leave Cafe Ramen. As soon as I'm outside, I call him. Ethan picks up immediately, of course. Hi, Dad. How are you? Hi, honey. Good here. He clears his throat. We got a Granthorpe email saying that any female student who's feeling anxiety about being on campus right now can petition to finish the semester online, from home. My lunch suddenly feels like rocks in my stomach. Why don't you do that? Ethan's voice is light but cajoling. You said your chances of getting the internship are slim anyway. I can arrange for movers to empty your dorm room tomorrow. No, no. I take a fortifying breath. Things have changed. I have a chance of getting a great letter of recommendation from Professor Smith Hall. Oh? How did that happen? Nothing certain yet. Stepping off the walking path causes my shoes to sink a bit into the soft grass. I'm going to present our group project. If I do well, I'm sure he'll recommend me. I've done well on all the other metrics. That's great, honey. Congratulations. See, I told you if you continued to do stellar work, it would pay off. Mm-hmm. Listen, about Shane. I don't think your trying to contact him is a good idea. He's been hard to reach lately. I think he's really busy with school himself. I don't want you getting your feelings hurt if he doesn't answer your texts. My heartbeat kicks up a notch at that. Obviously, I can't tell Ethan everything. But I wonder if I should at least tell him that I've already been talking to Shane. It feels like the right thing to do, since I don't usually lie to Ethan. But if I tell him, it could start a whole conversation I don't want to get into. About that, I murmur. Yes? I actually spoke to Shane in person. At the party? I blink, confused. What party? He said he saw you at a party. My skin prickles with unease. Shane and Ethan have talked about me? He did? What else did he say? Nothing. After a pause, he adds lightly, "It's Shane. Since he moved out, he's never exactly talkative, is he? The best I hope for with him is four-word phrases." I grimace. Oh, so not really a conversation then. I'm relieved, but also sad for them. Once upon a time, they were close.
Maybe things will get better, I say brightly. He was actually okay to me. He may find